This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Trash. It's definitively useless to at least someone, the person who threw it away, but it also is useful in the way that it can tell us a lot about those who left it and those who cleaned it up. And it's this part of the January 6th insurrection story that I've been curious about. Who cleaned up after the rioters on January 6th? Who really picked up the pieces? So a few weeks ago, I started making calls.
Thank you for contacting the Department of Public Works.
Turns out the Department of Public Works in DC really didn't play a part in the cleanup in the aftermath. I also called U.S. Park Police, which oversees, the federal lands on the National Mall. And they said they didn't have anything to do with the cleanup either. And U.S. Capitol Police, they said they really focused on the cleanup inside the U.S. Capitol, which was ransacked, and in the grounds immediately around the complex. But as far as the question of who cleaned up after the rioters who started at the Ellipse at the White House and trotted down Pennsylvania Avenue to the U.S. Capitol, who cleaned up all of that mess? That question led me to this guy.
Testing one, two.
That's David Smith, veteran and founder of Continue to Serve. So who is David Smith? And why did he decide to clean up after the January 6th rioters? Welcome to the DMV Download Podcast. I'm your host, Luke Garrett, and this week we're going to focus in on this moment of the January 6th insurrection, when local citizens banded together to clean up after rioters came in from out of town to riot at the U.S. Capitol. And joining me now to talk about this is David Smith, founder of Continue to Serve and a Navy veteran who really gathered hundreds to clean up on January 10th in the days following the insurrection. David, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Before we get to the cleanup of January 6th, where were you on that day? Where were you when the insurrection was happening?
I was down there. I was watching it. I lived in DC. That was my town. It still is. And out of all the places I've lived, I've moved a lot. I love DC. That day was rough. And I had two thoughts. One was I need to get my family and I need to get out of town because I don't know how this is going to unfold and it looks bad. But the other part of me was it was kind of like a car crash you just can't look away from. I wanted to be there. I wanted to see it. I had to be there. And so, we were down there. We actually, myself and another colleague from Continue to Serve, we had it was a really cold day. So we took some hand warmers and some snacks and we were actually handing those out to the homeless. And then kind of just moving through and bearing witness to what was happening that day.
And as you sort of, watched this car crash, what was going through your head?
I genuinely thought, this is it. This is how democracy dies. It was very intense. There were so many weird things too. I heard chants about burn your blue line flag because they were so mad at the police for not letting them storm.
We're trying to hold the upper deck. We are trying to hold the upper deck now. We need to hold the doors of the Capitol. I need public support.
Obviously I saw the gallows. I actually, like so many others, I didn't realize it at the time, but I took photo, in framing the Capitol building with the gallows because I was just so shocked to see that right in front of the Capitol building. And then to hear people hang Pence and knowing that there is a gallows out there, and I have Marine buddies of mine that were, that don't live anywhere near DC that were like, oh, well, that thing wouldn't have held anyone anyways. And it was like, I don't think you understand the gravity or the point of what all this means. There's people with signs saying, bring guillotines back. It was just like, it was crazy.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was just a very intense day, and it just felt like we were watching it all fall apart.
And so in the days after, what kind of inspired you and continue to serve the organization to kind of come back to that scene of again, that car crash, the insurrection?
The colleague that I was out there with, we were walking around. We actually ended up staying out there a little bit past curfew, and we kept noticing all of these white nationalist or fascist organization stickers all over the place, on street signs, on company business doors, on just everywhere. He was like scraping them off with a pocket knife he had, and you know, I told him, I was like, look, like I'm a little nervous, like the police are around. We should probably go ahead and get out of here. But I promise you we'll come back, we'll get a group of people together, we'll come back through here and we'll clean all this up. And the next day we start planning that. And you know, it just social media being what it is, one of my colleagues thought to reach out to a couple of larger Instagram platforms on in the DC area. Once it got posted to that, it just took off like wildfire. And where we thought we might have 15 or 20 people show up for a cleanup, we ended up having over 350, almost 400 people show
Wow.
up. And it was shocking.
What did you literally find? I think this idea of what people leave behind, the trash they leave behind, kind of can tell you about who these people were. You know, what were the items and what did they tell you?
Everything from, you know, as we a lot of stickers. We also reached out to some local individuals to help repaint, do murals over the top of graffiti that had been done, of course, obviously with businesses' approval, and tents, signs, just an epic load of trash, just from people that had been out there all day walking around, and they had just like left it strewn about, from beer cans and soda cans to food wrappers to Trump flags and banners, and just a lot of debris, and you know, things that were broken, glass that was broken. Yeah, it was a mess.
And I feel like we've all been in that spot where, you know, we've had to clean up someone else's mess. And at least in my experience, you know, you actually can learn a lot about someone who leaves a mess behind from those items that you mentioned, tents, glass, bottles, stickers. You know, what did that tell you about these people that came and rioted at the Capitol?
I think after 6 months of listening to people talk about how protesters who are trying to fight for social justice, who, yes, at times things got a little unruly, but they were people who are fighting for their lives, is how they feel, as opposed to a more privileged part of society that doesn't experience as many of those hardships, and coming out and just destroying the facade of what is our capital city of our nation, and doing so under the argument that they're doing it to fight for the Constitution. You know, it's quite a disparity.
And David, you know, you chuckled at that use of the Constitution, which, you know, you as a veteran, as a former service member, took an oath to. You know, tell us about your service in the military and how that's kind of gotten you here.
I joined the military in 2007 as a hospital corpsman. Served with the Navy for 13 years. Spent some time overseas with the Marines as a combat medic, and served honorably for 13 years, and had a career across from, you know, the United States. Actually, I didn't actually ever. I was never actually on a ship, which was kind of ironic.
And what drew you to the military? Why did you want to be in the Navy?
I think 9/11 had a pretty big impact on that decision. My uncle, my grandfather was also in the Navy, so there is this heritage to that. My uncle was actually a corpsman, so it just it kind of fell into that line. And I just wanted to do something for my country. You know, I wanted to, I don't know, be a part of something bigger than myself, I guess. And I thought the military would be that.
Was it that? Was it bigger than you? And what was that like?
I grew up hyper conservative. My father was a Baptist minister. I was grew up in rural Oklahoma and Missouri, And since Afghanistan, for me, that changed a lot of my perspectives on things, had a huge impact. And then it was a decade of unrolling a lot of those hyper-conservative ideas that I once had when I finally left, because the first time I ever left the country was to go to Afghanistan. So,
And David, if you don't mind me asking, you know, what sparked that change? What sparked or instigated, you know, that rolling back, that shift in perspective?
I had an amazing linguist who I had countless hours sitting in the back of our vehicle or on foot patrols and talking to, who allowed me to ask a lot of honestly ignorant questions, but just I didn't know what I didn't know. And had a lot of patience with me. And about 6 months after being in Afghanistan, I was watching this baby that was being washed in, you know, this really dirty water, because they just pump water up from the ground and with no filters or anything like that. So they're just holding this baby in this like spigot. And, you know, I had this kind of epiphany moment of what would happen if I was born here. Why would that make me the bad guy? And from that point on, it just really, you know, I grew up, you know, Christian background, but why is it that I've believed for so long that like Islam is this terrible thing, right? Because I did. That's how I felt at the time. And now looking back, it's like, wow, you know, it's a much different perspective on things. You know, I kind of have this saying that, you know, people go to war and they either find God or they lose him. And, you know, I think war is a polarizing event for anyone who goes, and the effects of you on you can be pretty grand and can be life changing. And it was for me.
And David, just hearing you talk, I can't help but thinking about the Oath Keepers. You know, this is a group of veterans who claim to be keeping their oath to the Constitution. You know, a lot of those members have talked about their time at war inspiring their action. And, you know, they acted surely on January 6th. And your organization, Continue to Serve, you know, also proposes to keep your oath to the Constitution. You know, but these two organizations couldn't be more different, and especially on January 6th. How do you square these similar oaths, these similar missions, but disparate realities?
No, absolutely. I think this is the crux of what our mission has become. You know, we're trying to do our best to educate and empower and engage with individuals to understand our perspective on this. I can tell you with absolute certainty, had Rafiq not been my linguist, had I not had that time with him to see outside of my own circle on that deployment, I could have easily have been one of those people on JS6, wow, storming the Capitol building, because of how I was raised. And not necessarily how I was raised, but just the environment I was raised in, the people I idolized growing up, you know, Mark Levin, Rush Limbaugh, all these people that had these impacts on how I saw the world, but it was through a closed lens. And I think our mission and our purpose is to try to provide as much information as we can. It's not our job to change anyone's mind. You know, everyone's free to be an idiot if you want to be. But when it comes to how do you say who's right? I mean, you know, catchphrase is remember your oath, right? So we're, you know, I didn't know who the Oath Keepers was when I came up with that. I probably wouldn't have used that one had I known that. But I just think all of this comes back to ignorance. And I just think it's really important for us to try and get as much information out there as possible, because that's what Rafiq did for me. Just simply provide me a little bit of perspective from outside of my own world. And I think a lot of these people that believe the way they do are stuck inside of these echo chambers. It created this radicalization in a way, of people on both sides.
And January 6th, you know, wasn't your first rodeo. You know, Continue to Serve, your organization, started actually in 2020 during the Black Lives Matter protest. Take us back to that moment.
Sure, yeah. So on June 1st, 2020 is when President Trump stood in the Lafayette Square, which is now known as Black Lives Matter Plaza, in front of the church there. I was actually watching the news that day. I was off work. I was at home, and I was waiting for him because I had heard that he was going to speak with regards to the protests that have been happening due to George Floyd. Mm. And of course, this has been going on for months, and really Trump hadn't said anything at this point. And so I was curious to know what he was going to say about it. And watching what happened on June 1st, watching reporters, you know, get hit with batons, watching citizens expressing their First Amendment rights to protest, you know, watching them get gassed, beat, pepper sprayed. It was just gut wrenching. And then to see that Trump was at the same time saying things like, you know, I support people's right to speak out and da, 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 da. But then he obviously was not. And it just, it hit me hard. It just felt like this is not what I served in the military for. This is not what I see America as being. Essentially, the next day, a gentleman that I deployed with to Afghanistan happened to be going to school in DC, and he, you know, sent me a text and was just like, I don't know what to do, man, but we got to do something. Mm. And I was like, all right, well, I don't know what to do either. I've never done this before. He was like, well, I got some cardboard and some Sharpies, so let's go. And so that was literally the birth of Continue to Serve. We just wrote Vets for BLM on the signs,
right?
Because we wanted to, you know, we just wanted to amplify this issue using a veteran perspective, using a veteran voice, and trying to show that even if we didn't fully understand at that time what was happening or why it was happening, we wanted people to know that they had veteran support, and especially after January 6th.
Right. And so when you first started this, you know, after June 1st, were you surprised by how many other veterans kind of stepped up and became a part of it?
Yeah, no, all of it was going in blind. I had never protested before. I had never been affiliated with any activism or anything like that. And so, yeah, I mean, I really was. Initially, essentially what happened was I hopped on the Washington, D.C. subreddit, and I made a post about kind of a, in a way, I guess, a call to arms of like, I don't care what your perspective is on Black Lives Matter. I want all veterans and all, you know, any military that served, that took that oath when we were in MEPS, that Americans have the right to speak, and they have the right to speak up. That's what our oath is too, is to the Constitution.
Right.
And so, I mean, the post started to blow up. I, of course, was still technically in the military at the time.
Oh, really?
So I was very nervous. I actually ended up taking the post down because it was getting a lot of upvotes, and I was concerned that somehow it might be linked back to me, you know? And so then we had to, so I was like, I need to put this post back up, but how can I do that? And so Continue to Serve. I did a quick Google search. I did a quick website search. I couldn't find anything. I was like, it sounds great.
Right.
And boom, there it was. Wow. And so, yeah, so we had, you know, a handful of veterans just show up out of nowhere. Mm. And then from that point on, at least every weekend, if not throughout the week, we were at different events. We were involved in a number of either protests or direct action or local aid for various organizations. And so more and more veterans just kept coming out.
Right.
And it was totally shocking.
Wow.
To me. I wasn't for sure how it would be perceived.
Yeah.
And I genuinely believe that the progressive veteran is probably the best kept secret in the military.
Right. So, because came out of the woodwork, it sounds.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest thing that I have heard in the past 2 years from people sending us messages, people sending us support, is I didn't know there were other veterans that thought the same way I did.
Right. And I mean, you know, just talking about these two dates, June 1st, 2020 to January 6th, 2021. I mean, that span of time, the pandemic was raging. You know, there was unrest, as we've been talking about. It was kind of a hopeless time. You know, there's a lot of change happening, but things were pretty bleak. Now, 2 years out from January 6th, now 3 years out from, you know, the murder of George Floyd. Are you hopeful about the future?
I think we have a lot of work to do. I think what was frustrating is when, you know, and of course, this is just me speaking as a as an individual voter, not as the organization. But when they announced that Biden was elected president officially, we were actually at an event downtown, and I mean the streets just flooded with people and celebration. And, you know, so we were all happy that, you know, Biden had been elected and Trump hadn't. Yet none of those people were there for the past 6 months. No one was engaging. No one was out there. I remember in December when we were at the Supreme Court during one of the MAGA rallies, there was literally about 60 protesters that were standing against a crowd of at least 10,000, you know, MAGA supporters. And so I think we need more engagement. I think we need more people to understand that if we don't keep holding our government accountable, they're just not going to drive. They're not going to resolve these issues. And so I think we have a lot of work to do to try to, you know, I know not everyone has time or the ability to go out and protest and do those things. But I think we can create an environment where more people are willing to challenge the status quo, trying to have these harder conversations through education to kind of create a an environment where we can find change. I do think things are more hopeful than they were that day, for sure.
Right.
I think why January 10th and the cleanup happened and so many people came out is people were just looking for something to be hopeful about. They wanted to get out there and feel better about their country than what we had just represented. Mm. You know, and so I think there's a lot to be hopeful for. And I think there's a lot that I'm happy that we are in this place where we're at now, where we can start to usher in some of these changes, some social changes that need to take place. But I just think that we have a lot of work to do, because I don't know that there's enough people out there that think it's that their voice matters. I don't know that they understand how much of an impact they can have when they show up to an event, or when they volunteer for, you know, a mutual aid or any of those things. There's ways where we can all help kind of move us from where we were January 6th to where we should be.
Well, David Smith, founder of Continue to Serve, thank you so much for your perspective, your thoughts, and just kind of sharing part of your life and how it's led you to this moment.
Thanks for having me on.
And before we go, this week, the world heard one of the loudest echoes from the January 6th insurrection.
Officials in Brazil are vowing to punish thousands of supporters of former President Jair Bolsonaro, who stormed the Capitol on Sunday, hoping to have him return to power.
Rioters overtook police and stormed government buildings, all in the name of overturning an election that they think is stolen. Jair Bolsonaro was their candidate, and he lost. But before doing so, he sowed doubt over the legitimacy of this election. Sound familiar? Now, there are a few notable differences, and I don't mean to conflate these two totally. What happened in Brazil happened after the election was certified, unlike the January 6th insurrection. But it's almost impossible to not see the shadow of the January 6th insurrection looming over this riot in Brazil's capital over a presidential election. Meantime, we're still trying to figure out what exactly happened on January 6th itself. This week in DC federal court, Henrique Tarrio, leader of the Proud Boys, and four other group members are facing trial for seditious conspiracy. Testimony is expected in the coming days. The story of January 6th is still unfolding, and I'm sure there'll be much more we'll learn as time goes on. But for now, that'll do it for us today on the DMV Download. Thank you so much for listening. This podcast is brought to you by WTOP News. Listen on 103.5 FM in the DC area, 107.7 FM in Virginia, 103.9 FM in Frederick, Maryland, online at WTOP.com, and of course on the WTOP News app. You can find this podcast wherever you listen. Please reach out with your ideas and rate the show if you get the chance. I'd love to hear what you think about the show. Have a great rest of your week, and I'll see you on Wednesday.